This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raider podcast. I'm your host, JT. We'll get you ready for the San Diego Chargers hosting the Silver and Black this Sunday. I'm excited to go to that game, to be on the sidelines, and we're still looking for the Raiders' first win. This would be the perfect spot for the Silver and Black to shock the world, get a win here, and if they win this game, I'm just telling you here, it's the end of the season for the San Diego Chargers. A couple of things we're going to get into in this podcast. This is an absolute must-win game for San Diego. San Diego got off to this really quick start. All you heard about in the press, Phillip Rivers, MVP, Super Bowl, playoffs. Are they going to catch Denver? Let me tell you what's going on here with San Diego. They've lost three games in a row, and they are reeling at this point. Fortunately for the Chargers, they're coming off a bye week, but that last loss was an embarrassing loss to the Miami Dolphins, where they got shut out on the road and no one saw this coming. So the Raiders got to get moving here. A familiar opponent. The Raiders played San Diego earlier this year and they were in the game. A lot of Raider fans have told me that was the best performance by the Silver and Black all year long. They played with tremendous energy. They were in that entire game. The game just got away from them late in that game. They ended up losing 31-28 on October 12th. But as I mentioned, San Diego, this is their season. If they don't win this game, there is absolutely no chance that they can spin, that they can turn it around. Coming off that loss to Miami, 37-0, expect the Chargers to be ready on their home field. Just want to get back to the Raiders' loss to the Denver Broncos. A critical play happened in that game that still bothers me. The Raiders were up 10-6, played a really good first quarter, and had momentum in the game. And Peyton Manning threw two interceptions and no touchdowns up to this point. And it was a 3rd and 10. It looked like the Raiders were going to get off the field again, have an opportunity, a big opportunity to get to the half in a 10-6 game. And anything could change. I'm not saying the Raiders would have won that game against Peyton Manning, but they would have had the lead heading into halftime until C.J. Anderson went 51 yards.
Peyton in the pocket, in trouble, tries to hit the check down. C.J. Anderson with a one-handed catch. Can he make something happen? He does down the sideline. C.J. Anderson stays in bounds inside the 30, cuts across the field to the 25. It's a foot race to the 20, picks up blockers to the 10, the 5, touchdown Denver. Holy cow! 51-yard touchdown, Manning to C.J. Anderson. Wow.
So right after that play, the wheels came off of the Raiders. They were trailing 13-10. Then it was 20-10, and the Silver and Black ended up losing that game 41-17. That one play was the key difference in that game. I really believe Raiders could have stayed in that game with the way they were playing on defense well into the second half, but this podcast isn't about shoulda, coulda, woulda. It's about results. Busy podcast. Alex Marvez about to join us, NFL insider for Fox. Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, one of the all-time great sports radio legends in San Diego. And a name you're familiar with, Lorenzo Neal. What a fullback he was. A 3-time All-Pro, 4-time Pro Bowler. He'll join us a little bit later on. But we kick it off with Alex Marvez. He joins me on the radio often. Now he gets to come on exclusively on the official Raider podcast. And Alex, thanks for doing this. You have sources within the Raiders and around the NFL. The 0-9 start, where did it come from? What happened? Was it a product of the draft, free agency, or a combination? How did we get to this point?
All of the above, right? I mean, you check that. At first, you know, it just seemed the players to me, from what I understand, they just tuned Dennis Allen out after a while, and they weren't getting a response from him. And I feel for Dennis because I have a lot of respect for him personally. I think he can be a good head coach in the NFL at some point under the right circumstances, but this was not the right circumstance. And this was a team that just seemed to peter out under his watch. And by the time Tony Sparano inherited this team, you're in an 0-4 hole. But then you look at the personnel that they're working with. And I took a close look, knowing I was going to do this podcast, at the Broncos Raiders game, and I feel for a guy like Jason Tarver, because you can only do so much on defense with the personnel that they have. I mean, you look at what New England has, and they're able to rotate a whole bunch of different guys, are able to give different looks, you know, to a player like Peyton Manning, and they had him on the ropes. Well, with the Raiders, it just seemed like the same basic type of defense, zone coverage, inability to rush the passer, nothing all that original. And I know it's not because Jason Tarver is a dumb guy. I just think it's because he doesn't trust the personnel that he has to not get picked apart, and that ultimately what ended up happening me anyway with Peyton Manning. So there are some real weak spots. I mean, right now, I went back and looked, JT. The Oakland Raiders are on pace for the worst rushing offense since 1946. Al Davis, the late, great Al Davis, was 17 years old when the 1946 Detroit Lions averaged about 45 yards rushing a game. And right now, Oakland's a little under 63 yards rushing a game. I know Coach Sperano has said it's because we haven't had the opportunities, but the reality is when the Raiders have had the opportunity to run the football, they've been abysmal at it. And the weapons on the outside, again, whose fault is that? Is it the coaching staff for not developing players? Is it Reggie McKenzie's fault for not getting the right talent on the outside? I mean, it's a mess, and I really worry about this Raiders team going the over. 0-16, they may be able to catch a team napping. Maybe it's the San Diego Chargers on Sunday who've been in a bit of a free fall. But right now, this is the worst team in the league, and I feel terrible for those fans of the Oakland Raiders.
Let's stay with the offense and the rushing attack. I'm surprised by that because of the offensive line, and they tried to upgrade it. And with McFadden being healthy, Maurice Jones-Drew back being healthy, and you know, you look at Marcel Reese, who went to the Pro Bowl, and he's a guy who can line up in the slot. I'm surprised they're not able to run the ball with more success. I see some of the issues at the receiving position, but when you look at running the football, is it more the offensive line not getting a push, or are the backs getting older where they're not just hitting the hole quick enough?
I don't think the burst is there anymore. I think Darren McFadden has become a pedestrian running back, unfortunately, and I think those injuries have taken a toll as well as age. And let's be honest here. I think a lot of us in our mind are thinking the Darren McFadden of 2008 and not the Darren McFadden of 2014. Maurice Jones-Drew was on his last legs with the Jacksonville Jaguars, came into camp. He got hurt, obviously broke that hand, really hasn't made an impact. Latavius Murray did get some action in the second half, and I know a lot of Raiders fans, JT, they asked me on Twitter, why isn't he playing more? Why isn't he doing more? And I don't really have an answer, and I'm going to ask Coach Sperano that as soon as I have a chance to talk to him again, because maybe this is a guy who can provide a spark. But, you know, it was just so discouraging against Denver when you try to do some things on the outside of the defense, outside the tackles, and they go nowhere. I mean, even the reverses were getting blown up. So, you know, I like to think there's talent on this offensive line. I mean, I've seen there are worst offensive lines in the NFL, trust me, but they can just get nothing going. And then when you get into those long down and distances, it just puts so much on Derek Carr. And, you know, God bless the young man. He's really done a good job under some really tough circumstances, but that Broncos game showed that he still has a long way to go. This was really the first time that I just felt like Derek was in over his head a little bit and was really pushing. And again, though, his receivers were often covered, and he doesn't have a whole heck of a lot of targets. So without the complimentary running game, it's just so hard to develop a young quarterback.
NFL insider Alex Marvez joins us from Fox. Let's get to the San Diego game here. Wow, what a tale of three or four games from the start of the season where people were talking Super Bowl, Philip Rivers, MVP, to the last three games where they've lost three in a row, got embarrassed in their last game. What's happened to San Diego? I mean, I guess the bye week should help them here. They're trying to get healthy, but now they're even trailing Kansas City in the AFC West.
You're right, and how about this for a quirk? And the great Gil Brandt, who I work with on SiriusXM NFL Radio, he unearthed a stat from the NFL. The Chargers had one game in a 23-day span going into Sunday's game against the Raiders. They had that much time off because they played on a Thursday night, then they played the Miami Dolphins, and then their bye week followed. That's a whole heck of a lot of time to try to get healthy and to figure out what's going wrong with this team. And I think it's pretty obvious what's gone wrong with this team on the offensive side of the ball. They've lost a great running game that they had when Ryan Matthews was healthy. When Ryan went down, combined with the loss of Danny Woodhead to that broken leg, I mean, it's really hurt this team. And Brandon Oliver's been a nice story, but there's a reason that this kid went undrafted out of the University of Buffalo. Donald Brown is he's an all-around back. I'm not going to say great. I mean, he's good, you know, but he's not Ryan Matthews. I mean, he's not a guy that can really, you know, hurt you on the defensive side of the football. So without him, they've had to rely more on the pass. And while Philip Rivers, I still think, is a good quarterback, and while I think he has really good targets, the problem is that offensive line has gotten exposed. And, you know, they were able to camouflage a lot of that group's weaknesses with the running game, but the loss of Nick Hardwick has been a killer at the center position. And, you know, they've lost multiple centers this season. I believe they're on their fourth different starting center. So that's been a problem there. And on the defensive side of the ball, it's pretty obvious the lack of a pass rush. And Melvin Ingram's been missing. He's on that injured reserve with a designation to return. I thought Dwight Freeney would be able to make a successful comeback so far. He's really been persona non grata this season and is probably winding down a future Hall of Fame career. You know, Jeremy Itachu just hasn't really made a huge impact yet as a rookie, the second-round pick out of Georgia Tech. So the inability to rush the passer has really affected this Chargers team as well. It's exposed some weaknesses in the secondary without Jason Verrett because he's been banged up and some other injuries there. So it's been a rough season for the Chargers. I'm not saying that they're totally out of it. Again, I think all this time off should be able to help this team. But it's a vulnerable Chargers team, and right now they're not playing as well, clearly, as they were at the end of the 2013 season.
Yeah, I always look at the Chargers and their window of opportunity. Let's segue there with Philip Rivers, definitely in the prime of his career. I don't know where you think he is in his prime, in the middle of it, beginning of it, but he is a great quarterback here. And I think the Chargers, do you feel they have a sense of urgency that they got to get him the best talent around him quickly here? Because if Rivers doesn't win a Super Bowl here at some point in time, I think the Chargers will look back on it and say, we had Drew Brees, we lost him. The Stan Humphrey era, Stan went to a Super Bowl. Dan Fouts, who we get a chance to work with a lot, wasn't able to do it. I really believe that everyone in that organization thinks they're good enough to get to and win a Super Bowl with that quarterback.
Yeah, I think so too, but I don't sense that yet just because I don't feel like they've gone crazy in free agency. I think they've been very prudent with their plan, and I've got to give Tom Telesco a lot of credit. I mean, when he took over this team, this roster was a mess. I mean, A.J. Smith left behind. You know, I'm an A.J. fan personally, but gosh, his final few years as general manager were a complete train wreck. So I think they did a nice job plugging in holes. I mean, look, this Chargers team, in all honesty, probably overachieved in 2013, and a lot of us thought this was a 9-7 team. At least that's what I projected them as in 2014, and they're actually on pace to finish about 9-7. Now, in the offseason, what are they going to do to address the offensive line? I just think they need to get better there. I'm not big on King Dunlap as a shutdown left tackle, and I do think you could use someone better there. Clearly, the center position with Nick Hardwick's career probably over, you're going to need to look to do something at that spot. You know, but I do think that this team, though, I mean, and defense, you got to find more pass rush. You really do. But so I think they're not far away, but well, are they going to go ahead and try to go all in just because Philip Rivers is getting a little bit older? No. But I will say this, JT, and this is one thing about Philip Rivers that does concern me a little bit. Because of the way that he throws the football, the velocity isn't always the best. I mean, he's so precise in how he can place the ball for the receiver, but I think when he starts to go, when that arm starts to go just a little bit, you're going to notice it pretty quick. And I don't see Philip playing until he's 40 years old, to be quite honest with you. I look at him having about 3 more prime years, and then at that point, I look for the Chargers to probably move on at the quarterback spot.
One of the things that the Chargers and the Raiders have in common is their stadium issue. And you know that Mark Davis is working hard to secure the team in Oakland and the San Antonio rumors. L.A. is always out there because his dad was in L.A. And then you go to San Diego. And, Alex, I lived in San Diego for 8 years, and I'm just shocked. They are the team of that community. And you have communities like Rancho Santa Fe, Del Mar, La Jolla, Coronado. It's an incredible city with unbelievable weather, and their fans are diehard when it comes to the Chargers, and they're playing in that antiquated stadium. I'd say put it downtown in the gas lamp, the way Seattle puts their baseball stadium and their football stadium side by side. I think we'd all agree that San Diego's got a little bit more going for it than Seattle does, but the local politicians in Oakland, the local politicians in San Diego, it seems like both ownership groups don't get enough from their local politicians to give them what they want.
Amen to that. And I really think that, especially in San Diego, I'll speak to that first, I think they're playing with fire. Because the Chargers, you know, who's going to object to them if they leave? You know, really, in the NFL, you can't argue with them. And I think the same thing with Mark Davis, and I even think the same thing to an extent with St. Louis, because they're not getting the support from the local politicians they need. The big question is, who are the teams that the NFL wants to have in Los Angeles? And if a team moved and didn't get the blessing of the league, could they do what Al Davis did? Could they win in court and just basically say, this is my franchise, and I'm going to move it to where I see fit as an owner? And I don't blame Mark Davis for courting the San Antonio politicians, Los Angeles. Heck, if he went up to Portland and tried courting them, I have no problem with that either, because he is not getting the response from Oakland politicians that he needs. And I think it's a shame, because I know the passion of these Raiders fans, and let's be realistic here. I think it's the same for Oakland. I think it's the same for San Diego, and I think it's the same for St. Louis. If an NFL team leaves those towns, they're not coming back. The NFL is looking to expand internationally. There's other markets that they would look at first, because St. Louis has had multiple chances to keep a team. The Oakland Raiders, Oakland has had multiple chances to keep a team. And San Diego, the thing about them that makes this a potential move to me is that you don't have to lose your fan base per se. Yes, there'll be some fans who drop off, but the reality is that if you're a Chargers fan and you want to make the drive up 2 hours north, or 4 hours depending on traffic, up to Los Angeles to see a game, you could still do it, JT. So I think this is really something to watch, and it's really amazing to think this: Oakland, St. Louis, and San Diego. This may be the final season we see those teams in these cities. And we could be seeing the dying days of these teams, because nothing would shock me at this point if one of them says, hey, we're going to be relocating to L.A. and we're just going to go play in the Rose Bowl or wherever else for 2015 until we have a new stadium ready.
One more personnel question with the Raiders. Derek Carr, what do you like about him? Almost 2,000 yards, 13 touchdowns, and he has the arm to make all the throws. Is he the long-term answer in Oakland?
I believe that he is. Now, that being said, you know, you always wonder if there is a change of general manager, how the new GM would feel about Derek Carr, especially if the Raiders have the number one overall pick and if they feel that Marcus Mariota would be that guy and that he is the number. Because I think we can agree on this. I mean, I know Jameis Winston is up there in the quarterback talk, but it really looks like Mariota is the guy that I hear about from my NFL scouts and personnel directors and GMs that I talk to that is far and away the number one quarterback. If there's a GM who comes in or a head coach or both, that combination type guy who loves Marcus Mariota and says, okay, we like Derek Carr, but he's going to become a trade chip, so be it. I think he can be the long-term answer for this franchise because he has the arm strength, he has the intelligence, he's got the toughness. He's learned so much from his brother in terms of you know, how to handle adversity. I mean, remember, no one was going to be in a situation like David Carr was when he was getting sacked 70-something times right off the bat in his NFL career. I think he has shown enough to prove that he has the talent to be the long-term answer at this position for the Raiders. But again, when you have a team that's got a little bit of turmoil in the front office as far as the long term, I just can't tell you that he for sure will be that guy. But if it's me running the Raiders, I'm building around Derek Carr.
The Raider Nation thanks you for your time. Thanks for doing this. Hope to have you on again down the road, Alex.
Sounds great. Thank you, JT.
Thanks again to Alex Marvez for joining us. Check out his great work at foxsports.com, and you can catch him on Fox Sports 1. Thrilled to talk to our next guest, The Franchise, a pioneer in sports talk radio, and it all started in San Diego. Lee Hacksaw Hamilton joins us on the official Raider podcast. And Hacksaw, thanks a lot for coming on. You know this rivalry inside and out, and I think this is about as must win of a game as the Chargers could have, considering the fact they've lost three in a row.
JT, good to talk to you. I guess I would say must win, yeah, but this is not the rivalry that you and I cut our teeth on as sports talk show hosts. It's just a very different time. The Chargers are still a pretty good franchise, not quite what they were under the Marty Schottenheimer era. The Raiders obviously are nowhere near what they used to be, and that's a long road back. So it's not quite the rivalry. I do know that the way you play the day you play can trigger upsets, and I guess anything is humanly possible in the NFL. But San Diego's got to take care of business against the Raiders and then against the Rams, because after that they play five real people, and their backs are really to the wall because the AFC is so tough right now that it's going to be hard for them to win a majority of the final five games because of all the injuries they've had. So, yeah, they need to win this one, next one, and then see what happens after that.
Lee, the five-game winning streak that they had, Seattle especially, 30-21 at Buffalo, where West Coast teams have traveled and lost in the past. They got a free one against Jacksonville. They beat the Jets. The Raiders played them tough, 31-28. And then it just seemed like the wheels came off, and the loss at Miami, 37-0. What do you attribute that game to?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things in play. First of all, the winning streak was nice. The Seattle victory was a huge statement game of how potentially good they could be. That being said, you know, for the most part, they beat up the dregs of the NFL, sandwiched around the Raider victory. The other games, Buffalo was going through a quarterback crisis. The Jets at that point were a mess with Geno Smith. So, I mean, they should have beaten all those teams, and everybody in America was running around and saying, well, the Chargers belong at the top of the power pole. And I kept telling myself, well, wait a minute, they haven't played anybody yet. Well, you know, then you saw what happened with Denver, what you saw what happened with Kansas City, and then they got whacked in Miami. The big issue they have right now, they're just not the team they could be because they have so many people, notably on the defensive side of the football, hurt, and they had just a ridiculous wrath of injuries over the last year and a half. And they had not had much of a running game by virtue of injuries through the top three guys. So that's why they got killed in Miami. That's why they've not played as well the last 3 to 4 weeks. Now, they're going to answer the bell Sunday against the Raiders with virtually all decks on hand. Most all the injured guys are back. We'll see if they can keep them on the field. If they can, then they can be what they used to be when they beat Seattle. But if they can't, they're not going to postseason play.
Lee Hacksaw-Hamilton joins us. With McCoy as the head coach, do you think he's the answer? You mentioned Marty Schottenheimer and this rivalry. When Marty was there, and I remember Marty telling Charger fans, stop selling your tickets to Raider fans who were coming into town. Marty got ran out, and he didn't deserve it that way. They've been waiting for a coach. It seems like everybody's on the same page with this coach in the locker room, within the community, and nationally. Most people I talk to, insiders, think he's the real deal.
Oh, he is. I think he's bright. I think he's intellectual. I think he's fiery. I think he's very demanding. The word being used around the fortress now is accountability, which was not here during the Norv Turner, A.J. Smith era. No, he's done a really good job, and he's made it a much tougher football team to play when they're healthy. He's made Phillip Rivers a very different quarterback. Like him a good deal. But, you know, the problem is the window to get this thing done is almost closed. Rivers and Eric Weddle are the only players left standing from what was a pretty good team during the Marty Ball era. The entire offensive line that was really good for about a six-year run, they're all gone. They don't have much defense. They've tried to draft. They're much more athletic, but they're very young, and they got a lot of guys nicked up of guys they've drafted. Here's a stat that'll blow you away, JT. In the last year and a half, they've had 24 major injuries. 24 different players. That's a lot of quality guys. The only guys who have not gone down are Rivers and Eric Weddle. It's absolutely amazing.
Hacksaw, even when you were critical of Al Davis, you were fair. You understood that he was a Hall of Famer. He's inducted more Hall of Famers than anyone in Canton, and you were always fair to him. Now his son runs the organization, and he's tried by bringing in Reggie McKenzie, making changes, spending a lot of money in the offseason, and the Raiders are still looking for their first win of the year. As a former NFL voice, and you're real active in sports talk radio, and you know the West Coast, what do you think Oakland needs to do to turn this around again? Is it a personnel issue? Is it a stadium issue? Because their fans are very engaged and passionate and want this to turn around.
Well, it's a very complex question, JT. Sadly, the end of the era with Al Davis left them saddled with bad contracts, bad attitudes, probably bad players, and some bad draft picks. And it takes a long time to shovel out from all that bad stuff. This didn't happen overnight. This was coming a long time. It's a franchise that's obviously got financial issues. As great as Al Davis was back in the day as a football man, he probably had the world pass him by in the business end of the National Football League, and I don't know that they ever recovered. Maybe the marketplace in Oakland's got something to do with it. Maybe the stadium's got something to do with it. But I think in the bigger picture, if you had a better product on the field, then all those other things would fall into place. And Mark Davis just walked into a tough situation. I don't know if Reggie McKenzie's the right guy. It's too early to judge it a year and a half into that reign. Obviously, they must have felt that Dennis Allen was not the right guy. I really believe the next head coach is Mike Holmgren, and I think Holmgren's relationship and his track record of building around good quarterbacks is a real plus. So maybe Holmgren comes on board, and then they've got Derek Carr, and they've got Khalil Mack, and they've got some of the young players they're force-feeding. In essence, what the Raiders did this year, I felt when training camps opened up in Napa Valley, JT, was they rented a lineup for a year or two. They've not really committed any mega money long-time players, but they got to build it through the draft and then use free agency as a selection rather than what had happened at the tail end of Al's run, which was screw up the draft, give lots of money to free agents, and still not have it pan out. It's a long road back. Now, that being said, huge Derek Carr fan. Don't get him hurt. Very impressive with what he's done. And obviously, I think there's a few other select young players like Mack and a few others, but it takes time to fix a 53-man roster when it's been down for such a long period of time. The most staggering statistic to me, JT, since the night they played in the Super Bowl here, 2002, they are 53-135. That's bad. It's horrible. It's going to take a while to dig out from there. Stadium issue, I don't know how they solve it. There's some segment that is of the opinion that AEG would do the stadium if they could buy either 49% or 51% operations control of the Raiders and bring the Raiders back. Now, you know, there's a lot of sidebars to that about who are the Raider fans? Do we want that clientele? Well, if you have new ownership, new leadership, a different direction, a shiny new stadium coming up out of the ground, maybe that changes the whole persona, and you can still have Raider fan and silver and black and all that. So I'll be intrigued to see what happens. I don't buy the San Antonio rumor. The Bay Area, I don't know that Oakland's the right place anymore, economically and geographically, but I know they don't want to be the second citizen in the brand-new 49ers stadium. I don't know how you solve that, but, you know, they got a stadium issue. San Diego's got a stadium issue. With it. I mean, the worst stadiums in the world are out here in the state of California.
Absolutely. And lastly, do you believe this time next year when we're talking the Chargers are in San Diego or 2 years from now, or do you think they venture up the freeway to L.A.?
JT, the hidden story, nobody's really talking about it. I mean, the L.A. thing is a real complex puzzle.
Yeah.
But nobody's talking about the fact the league has privately said to everybody, L.A. is not an open market. It may be vacant. It's our market. It's not an open market. I've been told anybody that goes into L.A. has to pay a $400 million territorial fee. That'll be divvied up by all the owners. Well, Dean Spanos is not going to do that. Now, they're not making a heck of a lot of progress down here, although I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel if Spanos would put his money up front. They have the ability to build right next to Petco Park, the ball yard that you and I have sat next to watch the Padres. They'd have the joint parking, and parking, you know, and parking garages are an expense. People don't pay any attention to. Well, the parking's already there. You could build a brand new stadium right next to Petco on land for $850 million. I maintain this, JT. This is my blueprint. Dean Spanos announces, I am writing a check for $200 million. The NFL will give us $200 million with the G6 fund. We'll add $50 million for naming rights. That's $450 out of the $850. I think the community would find a way to bond the rest of it to make it work. But it's easy for me to say that. Spanos does not seem interested in writing a real check. See, I think if they write the check, they then put all the pressure on the city of San Diego and San Diego County to come up with the rest of the money. Because right now, the whole feeling on street corners is, well, rich man wants a bankrupt community to give him a new stadium. It's never going to work that way unless he puts his money up front and says, here's my bid, match it.
Fantastic. Sounds like I'm listening to you on the radio back in the day. Common sense, passion, and a guy who knows his franchise inside out. Hacksaw, thanks for doing this. I look forward to talking to you down the road, my friend.
I apologize. I do know everything about everything. Thanks, JT. Good luck for the show.
Finally, our last guest is Lorenzo Neal. You catch him on Comcast Sportsnet Bay Area postgame for the Raiders with Romo, Bill Romanowski. And what a player he was. A three-time All-Pro at fullback, a four-time Pro Bowler. Lorenzo, thanks for coming on. I want to begin with what happened to San Diego. Everybody was talking about the playoffs, the Super Bowl after that quick start. Now they've lost three in a row with the Raiders coming in. Is this a dangerous spot for them? If they lose here, I don't think they can recover. They're already chasing two teams in the AFC West.
Yeah, this is a huge game for the San Diego Chargers. The Raiders are playing for pride, and you got one team playing for, you know, to try to make it to the playoffs, so they understand what's at stake. But when you watch the Chargers and see how resilient and what type of players they have, when I look at this matchup, it's about two things. The Raiders do not have enough. They're a good team. They have talent, but they do not have enough talent to make mistakes. And you've seen the way the Raiders play. If they make mistakes, they get blown out in the game. They have to be perfect. The San Diego Chargers, on the other hand, they have a great receiving core. They have a great young core. They have a great quarterback who's, you know, not great, but, you know, on the break of being great. You have a Hall of Fame tight end. You have receivers. You have some running guys that can run the ball. Your defense was playing great early this year. So I think that the Chargers have to take that New England approach. Everyone in their mom was, and including me and probably including you, we said New England Patriots were done. We looked at them trading Logan Minkins. We watched that offensive line to get beat up. We watched what happened to Tom Brady against the Kansas City Chiefs. He looked like a rookie. No, all the pressure was on him. He didn't get any time in the pocket. You saw what Kansas City did, but what happened? Belichick and Tom Brady made both themselves uncomfortable. They said, is this the demise of these two? But what they do? They challenged themselves. They rolled the ship. And now everyone's talking about the New England Patriots, the best team in the AFC.
Lorenzo, last week I watched the post game after the Raider game, and you and Romo were talking, and they put up a tweet by me, and I said that when it comes to Tony Sparano, effort has never, ever been a problem. And I tweeted that before the game, and you guys put it up afterwards in the post game. And your analysis was a little bit different on that touchdown that when after Peyton Manning threw already two picks on that screen pass, it looked like he was going to get buried for a sack. 50-yard touchdown, and you didn't like the effort from the Raiders. Mack missed a tackle, Woodson missed it, Burris missed a tackle, but either way, one of those guys gets the Bronco out of bounds. That's a different game at halftime. I can't recall one play changing the energy in the Coliseum like that in years.
No question. That was a great point, and that's why we had to put your there, because you understand what Tony Sparano's been able to do for the Raiders and their organization. Besides this game, these men have been fighting hard. They've been getting better. They've been buying in. Denver, that one play to Anderson, a catch, by the way, that he made a great catch, one-handed catch, brings it in, Burris missed. Six guys missed the tackle, or seven had a chance. And when you can cut the ball again, cut the ball back against the grain all the way across the field, not downfield as a receiver, but in the backfield, usually pursuit, defensive line, a linebacker, someone's there. That was a lack of effort, and that's what I based that upon.
Great talking to you. I think you do an unbelievable job, not only on radio, but on TV. I'll see you down the road. Thanks for coming on.
No worries. Cheers.
Thrilled that Lorenzo could wrap up the official Raider podcast. Quick reminder, during the week, stay at Raiders.com. If you have a question for me, send it to me, #AskJT. We do that every week, and continue to listen to the podcast, spread the word, and hit me up at Twitter, @JTTheBrick. Hope you enjoy the game this Sunday. Hope the Raiders get a win. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.